It's time for this week's edition of the Virtual Bible Study. The Virtual Bible Study is a live, internet-only call-in program dedicated to the honest study and discussion of God's Word. Do you have a question about something in the Bible, or are you simply interested in learning more about the Scriptures? If so, we hope you'll stay tuned tonight as we look into the pages of God's Word. The Virtual Bible Study is brought to you this time each week by the College View Church of Christ in Columbia, Tennessee. You can participate in the discussion tonight by calling 931-381-4567 or by emailing your questions or comments from collegeview.com. We hope you'll take out your Bibles and study along with us as we begin an exciting study of God's Word on this edition of the Virtual Bible Study.
And welcome to the Virtual Bible Study. We're glad that you're here. This is the Virtual Bible Study for January 12th, and we're live. We're ready to go, and we are glad that you have joined us. My name is Jacob Gwynn. My father, Greg Gwynn, joins me. Hello, Dad.
Jacob, glad to be with you for the Virtual Bible Study tonight. We've already got several people logged on and listening. We're glad to have a lot of listeners, and we hope we'll have many participants tonight as we join together in a peer-to-Bible study over the Internet.
If this is your first time joining us on the Virtual Bible Study, we're especially glad that you're here, and we hope you'll stay tuned for the next hour. We just open our Bibles on the Virtual Bible Study, and we try to study God's Word with an honest and open heart to see what He has said to us and what His will is for us in our lives. If you have any questions about the things we talk about on the program tonight, we encourage you to call 931-381-4567, 931-381-4567, or email us your questions or comments to questions@collegeview.com. Dad, this is a listener participation program in which we invite our listeners to join in on the discussion so that we can have a good give and take and a good discussion with different people from really around the world.
That's right. That's one of the neat things about the Virtual Bible Study. It's not limited to a small locality. We're a fairly small locality here in Columbia, Tennessee, but we have the capacity through the Internet to even have international participants, and we've had some listening from foreign countries, and we're really glad, and we're just excited about the opportunity to study the Bible together over the Internet. As you said, Jacob, we're looking for participation from those who are listening. You can send us an email, and we'll try to get to all the emails if we possibly can. We encourage people not to wait to the very end of the program to send an email, because they come sometimes stack up at the end of the program. We're not able to get to them all. Send an email or give us a phone call. I know a lot of people have their phones tied up with their internet connection, but if you happen to have an internet connection that lets you talk on the phone at the same time, we'd really love to have a phone call.
That's right. The number to call is 931-381-4567 or questions@collegeview.com. We are live on Thursday night, but perhaps you may not have the opportunity to listen on a Thursday night. You can catch our program in the archive format on our website at collegeview.com, or starting last week, we began a service, Dad. We're podcasting the recent programs here, and if you have a podcast receiver, you can set that up to automatically download your program, the programs to your computer, and we encourage you to take advantage of that service should you happen to miss a program live.
We've been having a lot of people, Jacob, who have been accessing the archives of the program and the podcast, and we're excited about that as well. We're glad that that is available. You know, there's an opportunity to record some of that thing, to some of this sort of information, to an iPod, or to maybe burn it on a CD and play it in your car CD player. And I'm convinced, although I'm not saying necessarily about our program, but I'm convinced that this sort of thing would be a lot more spiritually beneficial than listening to some of the junk that's on the car radio or whatever.
That's right. Take us to work with you and use us in the commute and traffic. We're glad that you're here tonight, and we hope you'll stay tuned. Joining us on the program tonight to help with the discussion, Josh Overton is here. Josh was here last week. He's back again. Hello, Josh.
Guys, so thanks for letting me come back on here again tonight. Have fun every time I come on.
Thank you for being here. Dad, we're looking forward to the discussion tonight. We want to take up a subject which has been in the news a lot lately. You know, it is interesting when a religious subject is in the news, it's interesting to get the world's view of a religious subject. But that religious subject we want to talk about tonight is the subject of intelligent design. We've heard a lot about it in the news, where school systems are considering whether or not they should include teaching children about the theory of, or the fact, we believe, of intelligent design. But that is something that's been in the news. We want to talk about that on the program tonight.
Yeah, we're really, obviously, this is going to branch out to a discussion of evolution versus creation. And that's a worthy discussion. That's something that we need to talk about. But let's start the discussion by just commenting briefly about that recent news item in which a court in Pennsylvania struck down the intentions of a public school system there in Pennsylvania to teach intelligent design as an alternate theory of origins. In other words, the court said you cannot teach that. They said you can't teach intelligent design as an alternative to evolution in a science class.
Now, when they turned that down, Dad, in effect, they said the theory of evolution is more valid than the idea of intelligent design. That's what the courts have said, in effect, that it is more valid, or it is something that they believe is more worthy to be taught to students than the idea of creation or intelligent design.
Yeah, it's really a frustrating thing, because obviously evolution, we still call it the theory of evolution because it's not proven, can't be proved, in fact.
In fact, we can prove that it did not happen.
I think the proof is that it did not happen, and I think there's plenty of scientific proof that it did not happen. Now, honestly, we'd have to say also that you can't scientifically go back and prove the chronological events of Genesis 1. In other words, there wasn't anybody who was there to observe it, and there's no way to reproduce it. And so you can't do an empirical experiment and prove that creation occurred. You know, you can't do it in a test tube, and you can't reproduce it and observe it and measure it and so forth. But we can look at the evidence of what exists and have some really positive conclusions as to whether this came about by chance and accident, which evolution argues, or whether there was an intelligent designer who caused these things to come to be.
We want to look at the evidence tonight and consider evolution and ask, could it be possible that we have evolved? And we also want to look at the evidence and look and see, is it possible that creation is true? What do you think about evolution? We want to hear your thoughts on the program tonight. 931-381-4567 or questions at collegeview.com.
Somebody might like to email us or give us a phone call. You know, as we just start into this, you know, if you particularly have a bee under your bonnet about this court ruling, we'll give you a chance to vent on that, because I think it was pretty outrageous. I mean, we're not here to provide a political platform or forum, and so we don't necessarily need to get into the politics of it, but the idea that a judge would rule, as you said, Jacob, in favor of the fact that evolution is more substantially scientific than intelligent design, that's really ludicrous when we think about the flaws of the theory of evolution.
Do you believe in evolution? If you do, we'd love to hear from you on the program tonight. But more likely, if you're listening to us tonight, you do not agree with the theory of evolution. Why do you believe that evolution is invalid? Give us those ideas and those thoughts on the program tonight. 931-381-4567 or questions at collegeview.com. We'd love to hear from you now.
Jake, let me read you a couple quotes. One of them is from Lauren Isley, Ph.D. in anthropology. And in a book called The Immense Journey, he wrote this. Now, this is just talking about the fact that evolution as a theory is really in trouble. I mean, I think even scientists are beginning to realize this guy's an anthropologist, and he writes, with the failure of these many efforts, science was left in the somewhat embarrassing position of having to postulate theories of living organs, theories of living origins, which it could not demonstrate. After having chided the theologian for his reliance on myth and miracle, science found itself in the unenviable position of having to create a mythology of its own, namely the assumption that what, after long effort, could not be proved to take place today, had in truth taken place in the primeval past. And that really is, that quote, Jacob, suggests the problem of evolution. Under the very best laboratory conditions, under a carefully controlled experimental quality, scientists cannot reproduce what they imagine caused life to exist on planet Earth.
It does take more faith to believe in the theory of evolution than it does to believe in the idea of intelligent design and creation. But, Dad, before we get too deep into the program, perhaps it would be valid or valuable for us to explain and define what evolution really is. The American College Dictionary defines evolution as the continuous genetic adaptation of organisms or species to the environment by the integrating agencies of selection, hybridization, inbreeding, or mutation. And, Dad, when we talk about evolution, there are really two types of evolution. One type of evolution does occur, can be duplicated in a laboratory, and another type of evolution does not occur and cannot be duplicated in a laboratory. Explain those two types for us real quick before we go.
Jacob, the one kind of evolution you mentioned that we can observe in the physical world is called specific evolution, and that's changes within a species. And sometimes that happens observably over a course of time, just as things happen, or it can be forced. For instance, if we wanted to, we could take some rats and begin a breeding program in a laboratory. And let's say that we wanted rats to grow much longer tails and much smaller ears. Well, by a process of selective breeding and controlling other factors, maybe the environment in the lab and so forth, it could be done. We could end up, after several generations of rats have been born, we could end up with rats that had significantly longer tails and obviously smaller ears. Now, that is a form of evolution that's called specific evolution, evolution within a species. It's observable. It can be seen within a period of a few generations. It can be noted. But the thing to point out is that when that experiment is done, you can play with those rats for as many generations as you want, but when you get done, what you got when you're done is a rat. He's still a rat. He hadn't changed into a dog or a horse or a cow. He's still a rat. That's specific evolution. We're not denying that. That's observable and is very obvious to everybody, and nobody is trying to say that that doesn't happen. What we're denying when we say that we oppose the theory of evolution as an unprovable theory, what we're opposing is the kind of evolution that is typically taught in the schools today and that most people would imagine when we talk about evolution, and that's the idea that all the things that we see living on planet Earth today arose from a single living cell. Now, that single living cell came to life from inorganic or non-living matter. At some time in the way, way distant past, billions of years ago, somehow a bit of energy acted upon a bit of matter, and a living cell came into existence. And then over time, that single living cell has changed and mutated and evolved and reproduced, and all of the millions of different living things that we see on Earth today came from that single living source. Now, note, we said originally life had to spring forth from non-living matter, and then all of the changes that results in the myriad of different life forms that exist on planet Earth had to come from that original single source.
Mr. Brown, it makes you wonder where they're even getting that non-living matter from. I mean, there had to be something there for this to spring off of. How did they get that there?
Well, that's something we want to talk about, Josh. That's absolutely true. Where do we get that material from in the first place? The evolutionist has a problem. Even if we grant them, though, that the material existed, they cannot duplicate it. They cannot prove that that's what occurred. So now we have two types of evolution, specific and general, also known as micro and macro evolution, in which we have specific evolution taking place in the world today, but general evolution or macro evolution does not occur, in which we have species basically evolving into other species, Dad. That does not occur, and it cannot be proven in a laboratory. We're talking about the theory of intelligent design on the program tonight. Which one wins out in your mind? What about evolution or creation? Which one do you think is more valid? 931-381-4567 or questions at collegeview.com.
Let me read a couple other quotes here, Jacob. A fellow named Christopher Booker, writing in The Evolution of a Theory, he's talking about how evolution itself evolved, said, "A century after Darwin's death, we still have not the slightest demonstrable or even plausible idea of how evolution really took place. And in recent years, this has led to an extraordinary series of battles over the whole question. A state of almost open war exists among evolutionists themselves, with every kind of evolutionary sect urging some new modification. As to how and why it really happened, we have not the slightest idea and probably never shall."
Now that's an evolutionist, right?
That's right. And then another evolutionist, Francis Hitching, wrote, "To put it at its mildest, one may question an evolutionary theory so beset by doubts among even those who teach it. It encompasses extraordinarily large areas of ignorance. The theory is so inadequate that it deserves to be treated as a matter of faith." And I think that's really true, that to believe in evolution, I think, actually requires a stronger faith than to believe in what the Bible teaches.
Well, it's time for our first break. When we get back, we want to take your thoughts. What do you believe is more valid, the theory of evolution or the idea of intelligent design? Why do you believe that evolution is invalid? We want to hear your thoughts. 931-381-4567 or questions at collegeview.com. We'll be right back after this.
You won't want to miss what we talk about next. The discussion continues right after these important messages.
Hello. I'm Wade Shelton with tonight's Bible quiz. What were the race of giants defeated by Joshua? Stay tuned, and I'll be right back with the answer.
Hello, this is Preston Jackson from Valdosta, Georgia, and you're listening to the Virtual Bible Study.
Did you know the answer to tonight's Bible quiz? The question was, what were the race of giants defeated by Joshua? The answer is the Anakim. That's found in Joshua 11:21. Thanks for listening to tonight's Virtual Bible Study, and stay tuned for more exciting facts from God's Word coming up.
Quit checking your email. The commercials are over, and the Virtual Bible Study is ready to roll. Take it away, guys.
And welcome back. We're glad that you're here. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the theory of intelligent design on the program tonight. Do you believe that evolution is valid? Why or why not? Or do you believe in the idea of intelligent design, that there is a creator to the world? 931-381-4567 or questions at collegeview.com. Dad, there are a lot of holes in the idea of evolution. I'd like to hear our listeners' thoughts on some of those holes in the theory tonight.
Yeah, I got an email, Jacob, from Jack down in Georgia. Jack, glad you're listening tonight. But he writes, intelligent design has been labeled as creationism and religion, hiding out in the science and biology classes. The truth of the matter is that intelligent design is, quote, watered down creationism. It does not firmly stand on the Word of God, but allows for people to contemplate an intelligent designer or creator to understand the world. Children of God need to stand firm on the creation account in Genesis. It is imperative that our children are firmly planted in the Word and know about God and are willing to mention it to others. I think Jack's right. You know, interestingly, I heard a little news broadcast about this controversy, and the fellow who was arguing for intelligent design was not arguing for the Genesis account of creation. He suggested there may be many plausible explanations of intelligent design, and he mentioned the idea that maybe aliens from another part of the universe came and planted life here on planet Earth. And so I think Jack's observation is right. In other words, we should not be necessarily rejoicing because people are talking about intelligent design unless they also incorporate that with the fact that the Bible answers where the intelligent design came from, who the intelligent designer is, and that's Jehovah God.
That's right. Thank you for those comments, Jack. We appreciate you listening to the program down in Georgia tonight. 931-381-4567 or questions at collegeview.com. Looking forward to hearing from you on the program tonight. I want to hear some of your thoughts on evolution and why you believe that evolution is an invalid theory and why it could not have taken place. You know, Dad, we hear a lot of people talking about evolution, talking about a missing link, and that is the idea that we have animals, and they believe that animals evolved into humans, and if we could find that missing link, Dad, that fossil that maybe had the fish with legs or maybe had an ape that looked like a man, if we found that missing link, that transitional step along the way, then we would find out that evolution did occur. They believe that that evolution obviously was a gradual process with many, many intermediate steps along the way over millions of years, a gradual and slow process. And they believe that if we could find the fossils that indicated that this did occur, that we could prove that evolution is a true fact. But we cannot find those fossils, Dad. And if evolution were true, there ought to be missing links everywhere.
Well, that's right. If evolution happened, and it happened over a long period of time, then many, many fossils should have been laid down that represent sort of a chronology or a historical record of how that evolution took place. For instance, the modern-day birds are said to have been evolutionary descendants of the reptile family. And so if you can imagine, birds as we know them today came from the reptiles. That being the case, we ought to be able to see in the fossil record cases of of some kind of creature that wasn't really a lizard or a reptile anymore, but he hadn't become a bird yet either. He was somewhere in between. In fact, we ought to be able to find lots of them and show them gradually evolving from a reptile into a bird.
We ought to find a fossil with a reptile with little bitty nubs on it, and we ought to see a lot of those, and we ought to see a reptile with a little bit bigger nub. Finally, we ought to see something that looked like a wing, and gradually over time, that would evolve into a winged ad. There should be millions and millions of these reptiles running around that were half reptile, half bird, but we can't even find one of them.
That's right. Charles Darwin even admitted this weakness in his theory. In The Origin of Species, he wrote, "Intermediate links, Geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic change, and this is perhaps the most obvious and serious objection which can be urged against the theory of evolution." Darwin saw that this was a huge weakness in what he was suggesting.
Darwin understood that he couldn't find any intermediate transitional missing links, Dad. And notice what he said. He said the number of intermediate and transitional links between all living and extinct species must have been inconceivably great. Darwin says there should be missing links everywhere. You couldn't dig a hole in your backyard and not come across a missing link if evolution had taken place, Dad. The fossil record just does not support the idea of evolution.
Yeah, a fellow named David Kitts, Ph.D. in zoology, an evolutionist, said, "Despite the bright promise that paleontology provides a means of seeing evolution," now paleontology is just the study of fossils, "the study of fossils should prove a means of seeing evolution. It has presented some nasty difficulties for evolutionists, the most notorious of which is the presence of gaps in the fossil record. Evolution requires intermediate forms between species, and paleontology does not provide them."
That's right. Well, what does the fossil record show, Dad? Does the fossil record show evolution? Obviously not. In fact, the fossil record lends credence to the fact that creation took place, Dad.
Living things in their finished state, as we know them now, suddenly appear in the fossil record. We don't see a primitive beginning and a gradual evolution to the present form. We see life forms in their present state suddenly appearing in the fossil record.
The fossil record simply does not support the theory of evolution. What do you think are some other problems with the theory of evolution? We want to hear your thoughts on the program. 931-381-4567 is the number to call, or give us an email at questions@collegeview.com.
We've got an email from Ben down in Andalusia, Alabama. Ben, we're glad you're listening tonight. And Josh, he mentions something along the lines of what you were suggesting earlier. He says, "I guess you've heard this story about a group of scientists that said they could do anything God could do by using science. For instance, they said they could create a man from the dust of the earth just like God did. So God said that he would accept their challenge. The scientists bent over to get a handful of dirt for the experiment, but God said, no, you get your own dirt." I think that illustrates the point you're making, Josh, where even if you could believe that life could spring forth from non-living matter, well, where'd the matter come from, Josh?
Well, it's like you say, Mr. Gwynn, that even trying to explain that to somebody, how can you make something that's dead come back alive? I do a lot of deer hunting during the winter. And after I kill a deer, I can't walk up to it, pat a couple times and say, "All right, come on back." And I can't make it come back to life.
What's interesting, Dad, it goes along with the email there, that scientists are trying to do this in a controlled laboratory, Dad. They're trying to take this matter and make everything exactly right, make the conditions exactly favorable to what they want to do, where they want to create life from non-life, and they cannot come up with a way to do it. Yet we're to believe that it happened by chance, that everything, all the conditions got just right accidentally, and we have life come from non-life when scientists can't even reproduce in the laboratory. It's truly unbelievable.
Yeah. Got an email from Skip up in Indiana. Skip, glad you're listening tonight. He writes, "Help me come up with a list of the various sciences that depend on looking at evidences of intelligence. Forensics and anthropology are two that come to mind. In other words, they are sciences where one looks at the evidence and determines whether something was done by a human or nature. Example, Mount Rushmore. Is there anything about it that points to human design or an eroding process of wind and sand?" I think that's a great example. If you went out in the Dakotas and looked at Mount Rushmore, and you stood back and looked at the mountain that has the four presidents carved on the side of it, and you said, "Now I wonder Did that just happen? Did George Washington's face just appear on the side of it? The wind blew against that rock, and the rain and the soil erosion and all of that happened in such a way that that man's face appeared on it. Nobody, I mean absolutely nobody, would believe that. You just look at it and you know immediately that someone designed and produced that outcome. And so I think Skip's observation is right, that you know, like forensics and anthropology, there are sciences that evaluate such things. But then he says, it seems to me that biology is the one and only science where consideration of intelligent design is not even allowed. Makes one wonder why, doesn't it? I think it's a good observation.
The reason why is really the reason why they go to such extents to try to prove that evolution is true. Thank you for your email, Skip. We're glad that you're listening to the program.
Mr. Glenn, going back to what you said a minute ago, how the evolutionists thought birds came from reptiles. When I was still in school, science was one of my favorite subjects. I studied a whole lot about it and everything. And if you think about it, a reptile is cold-blooded. A bird is warm-blooded. He'd have to undergo a whole different chemical change to even become a bird. That's why during the winter you don't see reptiles and you see all kinds of birds.
Exactly right.
Skip in his email referenced an argument, really, Dad, that is the fact that evolution contradicts the second law of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics states that entropy is always increasing. So we got some big words there, but just to break it down and make it more simple, Dad, the second law of thermodynamics says that in any physical system, the level of disorder increases in a system over time. But what the evolutionists would have us to believe that the level of disorder in a system decreases over time and things become more organized as time goes on. But the second law of thermodynamics, a law that we can prove in a laboratory, says just the opposite, that given a period of time, that things will become more and more disordered and not more and more ordered.
That's exactly right. The second law of thermodynamics is one of the most fundamental laws of science. All scientific disciplines believe the second theory, the second law of thermodynamics. The idea of that is, Jacob, if I were to go out in the woods today and cut down a tree, what would become of that tree over time? Would it become more organized? Would I go back in 20 years and expect to see a coffee table where I cut down that tree? Or would I expect to find that the tree had decayed and rotted? And if I could find it, it would nearly have gone completely back to the soil. In other words, it was an organized living thing. And then it became disorganized. Left to itself, things in nature, left to themselves, do not become more organized, they become less organized. That's the second law of thermodynamics. Now, evolution argues just the opposite, that over a long course of time, things became much more organized on their own. That just doesn't happen in the real world.
We can see that in a workplace, too. When we look at a workplace, we have our workers and our general managers and our head man. And in the body shops I work in a lot, I really see that because the body shop manager, he'll have five people waiting outside the estimates on their wrecked cars. And then all his body shop guys will start coming up to him, hey, I need parts for this and this and this and this. And he just wants to explode. Well, without that manager there, though, keeping things under control, it would just be chaos, you know, wouldn't nothing ever get done.
That's right. Well, Dad, you know, the second law of thermodynamics says things become more and more disorderly throughout time, but evolution demands just the opposite. You know, evolution tells us that the world began when we had a lot of matter spinning around out in outer space somewhere, and throughout this process of things spinning around, perhaps a big bang, an explosion, things became orderly, and we got a universe where the sun is in the center and things rotate around in a perfectly organized fashion. Out of some type of catastrophic explosion, we got order.
Yeah, in other words, following the notion of the Big Bang, supposedly everything started with complete and utter disorder. And then we see not only things on planet Earth, but things in the entire universe in the orderly state that they are, that all happened in complete and direct opposition to the known scientific law, the second theory of second law of thermodynamics.
That idea is similar to an idea that we would have a lumber yard and a hurricane would go through that lumber yard and build a neighborhood. That's exactly the same same thing we're talking about here. They're saying we had all the matter out there. There was a catastrophic event, an explosion or something else, and we got order out of it.
You know, when we went down to Mississippi, Jacob, following Hurricane Katrina, that's not what we saw.
And it never happens.
Never happens.
Because of the second law of thermodynamics. Those things just don't happen.
I know we're coming up on a break, Jacob. Let me read a follow-up email from Jack down in Georgia. Jack writes, evolution has permeated our whole culture to the extent that we even have television commercials like a recent Geico commercial poking fun at the caveman. While it may seem humorous, it is nonetheless keeps up the false assumption that man evolved from a caveman. It is so disheartening to hear commentators refer to our closest ancestors in the animal kingdom, monkeys and apes. This teaching comes from our educational system that seems bent on continuing teaching this falsehood. So that's right. I mean, even subtly, we and our children are being conditioned to believe the false theory of evolution.
Well, that's right, and we appreciate your comments, Jack. You know, Dad, the idea of the caveman is one that we've got to be careful about in our own minds, because we often think that we are somewhat more advanced, more evolved than those who lived before us. Yet the people we read about in the Bible and all throughout history are no different than we are, Dad. We have not evolved. We are not more advanced than any Bible character we may read about.
Adam was not a primitive caveman. Now, there are people who lived in caves in the course of human history. There are people today in parts of the world who live in caves.
But I'll tell you this, they're no more smarter or dumber than we are.
That doesn't mean that they somehow are lower on a lower rung on the evolutionary ladder. There were not cavemen. Adam was created a complete and mature human being.
Well, when you think about it, if you read your history books, the Egyptians were one of the most advanced people of their times. I mean, when you read about them, they just talk about all the things they come up with. You know, they were very advanced people. They weren't somebody that just lived up the mountains and, you know, grunted at each other.
That's right. 931-381-4567 or questions@collegeu.com are the ways you can participate in the program tonight. We want to hear from you. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
Don't touch that mouse. The virtual Bible study will be back right after this.
Do you remember when the emphasis of the work of the church was on teaching the gospel, converting the lost, and strengthening the saints? Can you recall good old-fashioned gospel preaching that appealed to the Bible as the sole and final authority in all religious matters? Are you tired of seeing churches that seem much more interested in social events and entertainment than in simply following the New Testament pattern? Would you love to hear lessons from the pulpit like you used to hear? Do you want to find a church that is still doing things the way you remember from years ago? If these things describe the way you are feeling, please visit the College View Church of Christ.
Hi, my name is Troy Smith. I'm 12 years old and I love to listen to the virtual Bible study.
We're waiting to hear from you. Call in right now and join in on the virtual Bible study. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the program. We're glad that you're here. We hope to stay tuned to the top of the hour as we talk about intelligent design tonight versus the theory of evolution. Why do you believe that evolution is an invalid theory? Or if you believe in evolution, we'd love to hear from you on the program tonight at 931-381-4567. 931-381-4567. Or questions@collegeview.com. Dad, our listeners may notice a difference on the program tonight on the website. We have a new address on the internet that you can go to directly to get to the program. Just type in thevirtualbiblestudy.com, and that'll take you directly to where we are, Dad. That's a new feature that we have on the program. Maybe make it easier for us to tell others about the program.
That's right. We initially were only at collegeview.com, but now, and you can share this information with others easier. Tell them you listen to the virtual Bible study and tell them go to thevirtualbiblestudy.com. And that should be a pretty easy thing to spread the news. And that's what we want you to do. Tell others about what we're doing here on Thursday night.
We want to remind you this program is brought to you by the College View Church of Christ in Columbia, Tennessee. If you're in the Columbia, Tennessee area, we'd love to have you visit with us at any of our services together. We meet at 9:30 on Sunday morning for a period of Bible study with classes for all ages, followed by a period of worship at 10:30. Then on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock, we meet for another period of worship. You'd be welcome at any of these services. And also on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock p.m., we meet for another period of Bible study with classes for all ages. We encourage you to come and visit with us at the College View Church of Christ to find out what we're all about. We're on Hampshire Pike, right across from Columbia State Community College. If you need directions, visit our website or call us at 931-381-4567. We look forward to meeting you soon.
Jacob, we got a follow-up email from Ben in Georgia, and he sends a quote about macro versus microevolution, which we had mentioned earlier. Microevolution or specific evolution, evolution within a species, you know, we've said does occur. Macroevolution or the general theory of evolution that suggests huge changes that new species have evolved and so forth is not provable. And he's got a quote from a fellow, and I can't say this man's name, David. How would you say that, Jacob?
I wouldn't even try.
It's a Scandinavian name. I can't say the name. But anyway, let me quickly read this quote. In the first half of Species, Darwin cited evidence for microevolution or changes on a small level between species. His discovery of several different types of finches on the Galapagos Islands with similar characteristics derived from a common ancestor comprised his evidence for microevolution. The 14 different species of finches vary according to plumage size, from the size of a sparrow to that of a large blackbird. Beak morphology, behavior, environmental habitat, they were each very different yet closely related. From this observation, Darwin then extrapolated his explanation for the origin of life forms from a common ancestor or macroevolution. He used the evidence from the first half of his book on microevolution to suggest that the same mechanism could produce all life forms. However, this concept of macroevolution is not supported by modern scientific evidence. Although we can explain and understand the mechanism behind microevolution, we can still only theorize about the possible explanation for macroevolution, since it has no scientifically valid occurrences.
Well, appreciate those comments, Ben, and it does help us, that quote does help us to understand that this is just a theory. The idea of evolution is just a theory that Darwin thought up, and that, as Ben has shown us with that quote there, there is absolutely no founding for that theory in science, and it simply is not true.
Jay, we could continue to cite some of the flaws in the general theory of evolution, and one of them is that it, again, flies in the face of known scientific law, known, observable, and accepted scientific law. For instance, one of the very basic laws of science is the law of biogenesis. And the law of biogenesis says life comes from life and living things produce after their own kind. That's just really very simple. You know, if you plant a garden and you plant a row of peas and a row of corn, you expect peas and corn to come up where you planted them. You got the seed of the corn from a corn plant, and when you plant the seed, it produces after its own kind. So life comes from life, and living things produce after the kind. If you have two dogs, and they breed and have an offspring, you expect it to be another dog, not a cat or a horse. And so the law of biogenesis is just completely known and accepted by all.
And it works in our favor.
It works in our favor. We'd be in a mess if it didn't.
Have a baby and
You and your wife are expecting, and boy, I hope
don't know to make a I hope be a baby bed or a dog pen. We don't know.
Yeah, or a horse stall. You know, what are you gonna? No, we're very grateful for the law of biogenesis, but think how the theory of evolution flies in the face of that. It says, first of all, life did not come from life. At some time in the distant past, life sprang forth from non-living matter, and so it says there was at least one time when life did not come from life, and then myriad multitudes of times, life did not produce its own kind, it produced different kinds. And so the theory of evolution depends upon denying the acceptable law of biogenesis.
Well, that's true, and also, Dad, evolution demands that the Earth be very old, and this is a big sticking point for the evolutionists, because the evolutionists must prove that the Earth is old, very, very old, millions and billions of years old. Dad, the evolutionist has to have a lot of time because they understand that if evolution were to take place and we were to get all the species in the world today that exist and they were to evolve from one single cell, that the Earth would have had to been around for a long, long time. Yet we see very clearly by looking at the world that we live in that we do not live in an Earth that is old enough to allow for the theory of evolution to be true.
That's right. I think that's one of the greatest weaknesses of the theory of evolution. Evolution, if it did happen, would require long, long periods of time in order for it to happen. And the Bible indicates, and an increasing body of scientific evidence is indicating, that the Earth and the physical universe is not nearly that old.
Well, we can look at the size of the sun, Dad, for one, and we see that the sun is shrinking at a known rate. We know that the sun, as it burns out, is getting smaller throughout time. And we can calculate at that rate that we can notice in the sun's shrinking, we can calculate backwards and determine how big the sun would have been at given times in history. If we look just 100,000 years ago, Dad, we see that the sun would have been twice as big as it is now. That would have made things pretty hot around here, wouldn't it?
Yeah, really. What you're saying there, Jacob, is that evolution demands that the relationship between the Earth and sun that would put us in a favorable heat range. In other words, if we were closer to the sun, we'd be too hot. If we were farther away, we'd be too cold. The Earth is just ideally situated in distance from the sun to allow life as we know it to exist on planet Earth. The theory of evolution would require that critical relationship of distance between sun and Earth has been maintained for billions of years.
And we're talking just 100,000 years ago, the sun would have been twice as big as it is now. That 100,000 years ago on the evolutionist timescale is nothing, because they're saying that the Earth would have had to been around millions and billions of years. What about 20 million years ago? How big would the sun have been then? The Earth would have been inside the sun. The sun would have been so big.
Yeah. And so it's just, it proves, I think that consideration alone proves the total implausibility of the theory of evolution. Let me give you another. This is a real interesting study, this age of the Earth question. But let me give you another example of how science is coming to the conclusion that the Earth and the physical universe can't possibly be as old as some would lead us to believe. You know, the moon collects debris from the universe, cosmic debris, meteorites and dust particles and everything else.
Golf balls.
Well, yeah, I guess one of our astronauts carried a golf ball up there, hit the longest golf drive in the history of mankind. But the moon has no universe, or the moon has no atmosphere, and therefore the meteorites and dust particles and other things that would be burned up in the Earth's atmosphere are not burned up when they impact on the moon. And when they originally sent men to the moon, they were really concerned that they might have a problem with the landing craft, because it might land and there might be such an accumulation of dust on the surface of the moon that the thing would just sink up. Well, when they got there, they found effectively no dust or very little dust on the surface of the moon. Now, they believe that they could calculate the rate at which cosmic dust would accumulate on the surface of the moon. It should be many, many feet deep. There was very little at all, which argues the moon hadn't been there for that long collecting cosmic dust. The Earth and the moon haven't been around as long as some would lead us to believe.
Just another indication that the Earth is not old enough for evolution to have occurred. Another indication that evolution is a false theory. What do you believe about the theory of evolution? We want to talk about that on the program tonight at 931-381-4567 or questions at collegeu.com. Got another email there, I believe, Dad.
Mike here in Columbia has written in and says, can you address the issue that now seems to have crept into some churches, and that is some Christians and churches have accepted evolution yet still say they believe the Bible? I've heard some say that God created the world, but he used evolution as his tool for it. I've heard others say that the world isn't just a few thousand years old, but many millions or even billions of years old. I find the two sides to be completely at odds and incompatible in every way, in so much that it would make Jesus a liar. Well, I think Mike is right. In other words, what we're saying, that the theory of evolution just doesn't work. And it doesn't work even if we say God was the one who initiated it. Sometimes that's referred to as theistic evolution, that it is evolution that was produced or caused by God.
Well, and we have the same problems of everything that we've noted except for the fact of where did the material come from.
Yeah, the only thing that would answer that we've talked about tonight is where did the life originally come from and where did the matter come from. But all the other holes in the theory, the lack of transitional fossils, age of the earth and everything else that we've talked about, the second law of thermodynamics, the law of biogenesis, and so forth, all those same problems would continue to exist.
That's right. The number to call is 931-381-4567, or send us your questions or comments to questions@collegeview.com. We appreciate your comments, Mike, and we're looking forward to some of our other listeners commenting, Dad. We've got about 15 minutes more to go in the program. What do you think? Why do you believe in the theory, or why do you believe in creation? Why do you disavow the theory of evolution? 931-381-4567 or questions@collegeview.com. We'll be right back after this.
Did you hear what they just said? Call in during this break and let everyone know what you think. The virtual Bible study continues after this announcement.
Hello, everyone. I'm Monty, a member of the College View Church of Christ. So you've been hearing all about the College View Church of Christ on the virtual Bible study and are interested in finding out more about the church. But you live hundreds of miles away from Columbia, Tennessee, and can't come and visit with the congregation to find out more. There's no reason to fear. After all, we live in the 21st century. Here's what you can do to find out more about the College View Church of Christ. First, why don't you check out our website while you're listening to the virtual Bible study? You'll find important information about the church there, including bulletin articles there on various subjects, and can even listen to sermons that have been presented at the College View Church in the past. Secondly, if you have questions about the church or about any Bible teaching, why don't you send an email to us and let us know how we can help? Send your questions to questions@collegeview.com. That address, once again, is questions@collegeview.com. We can even have a personal Bible study with you over email if you desire. And finally, if you would rather talk with someone in person, give us a call at 931-381-4567. That's 931-381-4567. You can call this number anytime. If you don't get an answer, leave a message and we'll call you back as soon as we can. We're glad you're listening to the virtual Bible study and hope to hear from you soon.
Hi, my name is Mike Holt. My wife and I, we love listening to the virtual Bible study.
Use your internet connection for something good. Listen to the virtual Bible study every week. Now, back to the program.
And welcome back to the program. We're glad that you're here on the program tonight, and we hope you'll make the virtual Bible study a part of your regular Bible study routine on Thursday nights. We're glad that you're here, and we enjoy the study with you tonight. Well, Dad, we're talking about the theory of intelligent design versus the theory of evolution. And we believe, Dad, that there are so many holes in the theory of evolution that it must be disregarded. We have a few more emails, I believe, along the on the subject.
We have an email from Jill here in Columbia, and she writes, evolution is scary enough and a big enough problem, but as you stated, it is slowly losing ground. The theory that they seem to want to push on us now is the alien theory, that we were put here by aliens. So the aliens must be smarter, but where did they come from if we are to believe this? Why can aliens have created us, but the idea of God is unbelievable? You know, that is amazing to me. I think a good observation that Jill makes. We're supposed to believe in space aliens, but they think that we're wrong to believe in God. Or the suggestion of space aliens is feasible, but the notion of an intelligent creator, Jehovah God, is something that we should have court orders about to keep it out of the schools. And so that just shows the bias against God and the agenda that liberals have in our culture.
That's right. 931-381-4567 or questions@collegeview.com. We'd love to hear from you on the program tonight.
We got a follow-up from Skip, who emailed earlier. He says, an observation that fascinates me is that even if one could explain the evolution of the most minute parts of a cell, the question would still remain, where did the information come from? An example, there is a physical structure to DNA, but from where did the information come that DNA carries? I think he's exactly right. Now, I want to take Skip's comment and go to a question that we got from Phil in Nashville. Phil writes, can you talk about what exactly the theory of intelligent design argues? Besides just saying there must be a God, what scientific arguments does intelligent design use? He says, I don't know much about the formal theory known as intelligent design. Well, the arguments being made by those who are promoting this idea of intelligent design is, as I understand it, basically this. Now, they are not necessarily arguing for God. And I think that's the link that the liberals want to make, that, you know, by teaching intelligent design, we are therefore arguing for Jehovah God. That's not necessarily so. Some who are teaching intelligent design or who want to include it as a possible explanation of origins would argue maybe that the intelligence was space aliens or something else. But what they're saying basically is that there are things here that exist that could not have come by chance or could not have been produced in incremental steps, the likes of which the theory of evolution would require. For instance, as Skip mentioned in his email, in a single living cell, there are a number of critical components that must come together simultaneously. It would not be possible for one part of it to evolve and then later the other part come along and evolve, and then a third and a fourth and a fifth and a sixth part evolve over a period of time. There is a thing called irreducible complexity. And in something as tiny as a living cell, there are so many necessary component parts that must come together simultaneously that it could not happen by chance. It had to have been planned and designed. And I think that's the basic notion of the theory of intelligent design.
It's basically the idea of a design demands a designer, Dad. We see design in the universe, therefore there must have been someone to design it. Along those lines, Jim in Rockland, California is listening, and he called and left some comments. Jim, we're very glad that you called in tonight, and we're thankful for your comments. Jim says, what are the odds or the probability of the sun and moon being placed in the proper orbit that is necessary for humans to live? That's an excellent point, Jim. What are the chances of that, Dad? The chances are just astronomically slim that we could have everything lined up in just the right order so that life could exist.
That's right. And along that lines, as we were mentioning earlier, planet Earth is in a unique relationship to the sun. If we were 5% closer to the sun, we would be too hot. Life couldn't exist here. If we were 5% farther away from the sun than we are, it'd be too cold. That life couldn't exist here. And so we're in a narrow, very narrow band that would make life possible. Now, what's the chances that would be so? Just, you know, it's incredible. And furthermore, what's the chances that critical relationship of distance from Earth to Sun could have been maintained, as the theory of evolution would require, for billions of years in order to allow life to evolve?
Again, we're talking about things that are incredibly slim chances of happening, but we have to add all those up, Dad. What are the chances that the Sun is exactly the right distance from the Earth? What are the chances that we have exactly the right genetic or organic pool of mush that's out there? What are the chances of exactly the right things happening so that we could get a single cell? What are the chances of that cell living long enough to reproduce? And what are the chances of it mutating in such a way? When we add up all the chances of that, it's just impossible that that could have occurred.
And again, don't forget this notion and I think it's critical to the argument of intelligent design, this notion of irreducible complexity. In other words, you can reduce things down to a certain level, but if you take them beyond that point, then they can't. For instance, a living cell can't exist without certain critical fundamental parts, and those parts must all exist in working order in order for the cell to function. And so that all has to be together simultaneously. You don't have billions or millions of years to allow that process to evolve, because the cell will not live until all the critical components are together at the same time.
Jim in California also noted that Darwinism is taught as being a theory, not a fact. He says, why don't they just call it a fact? Because that's what they believe. It's only a theory, and that is true, Jim. We're very thankful for you listening out in California, and we're glad that you called in the program tonight. Josh?
When we talk about design demands a designer, what do you think about that, like baking a cake in the oven? You can't just take a bowl of flour and throw it in there and expect a cake to come out. We have to mix up the ingredients.
And be present in the right relationship to one another. Everything has to be right just to bake a cake, let alone make a living.
Exactly. Better. You can't take too much salt and stuff and not enough flour and expect the cake to come out right.
We have plenty of time to take your thoughts, 931-381-4567, or questions at collegeu.com.
Jacob, you mentioned a couple times the idea of mutation. You know, that goes to the theory of evolution. Darwin suggested the idea that living things mutate, and then by a process of natural selection, the changes and the evolution occurs that makes new living things. Now, We know that there is such a thing as mutation. But what's interesting is that in the observable world, mutations don't help living things, they hurt them. In fact, I got a quote from a fellow named Lamberts, right in the Journal of American Scientific Affiliation. He says, biologically, all mutations are defective. Another man named Mueller in Time magazine wrote, most mutations are bad. In fact, good ones are so rare we may consider them all as bad. Now, what if you heard, for instance, that you got some friends and they had a baby and someone told you the baby has a mutation? What would be your reaction to that news? You'd think, oh, that's bad.
Is there anything we can do for them?
Yeah, that's bad. You would say, oh, man, that's good.
This guy is going to be something
special. He's going to be something real special, you know, because he's got a mutation.
He's got a third arm. He's going to be better. He'll be a better worker and make lots of money.
No, we know when we hear the word mutation that always implies something negative. But in the case of the theory of evolution, we're supposed to believe that progressive series of favorable mutations occurred that brought all the various living things that we see in the world today into existence. Well, it just doesn't happen. It's not observable. That's just not an explanation. So what we're saying is that the theory of evolution just has incredible problems. And we're not even arguing from the Bible here. We're not citing the Bible, you know, reading Genesis 1 and saying the Bible says God did these things, therefore it is so. Now, we believe that, but what we're saying is just from a scientific consideration, the theory of evolution is so shot full of errors and flaws that I really think, Jacob, that it will not be that long. I think we may be beginning to see it break down. I believe even the scientific community at some point is going to abandon the theory of evolution because it just doesn't work.
But sadly, religious people are compromising with science, Dad, and are adopting ideas like theistic evolution, which God started the process of evolution. Again, we've shown the facts do not allow for that. And they're also, Dad, compromising with science on other things like the age of the Earth. When the scientists tell us that the Earth is millions and billions of years old because they must have the Earth be millions and billions of years old if their theory of evolution has any chance of being plausible, we have religious people, Dad, who are compromising with the scientists and are saying that the Earth must be millions and billions of years old and that the Bible is not valid when it tells us that God created the Earth in six literal days.
Exactly right. I jumped the gun on Aaron down in Louisiana. Aaron, we're glad y'all are listening down there in Louisiana tonight. And he wrote an email here that was along the lines that he does a better job than I did of explaining the problem with mutation and natural selection. He says, the proposed mechanism for evolution is that organisms experience major genetic mutations and that sometimes those mutations result in organisms with an evolutionary advantage that causes them to become dominant over the old, unimproved organisms. A normal human being has 46 chromosomes. There are occasionally people born with a major genetic mutation so that they have extra chromosomes. We call this condition Down's syndrome. And in hundreds of thousands of observed cases, exactly zero of them have resulted in an evolutionary advantage. So even though organisms do mutate, every major mutation ever observed in humans, Down syndrome, hemophilism, albinism, etc., is a degradation rather than an improvement. So the number of required mutations that evolution requires is far more than the evolutionist requires is far more than he would have you to believe. Because observation has shown that you need hundreds, thousands, or millions of mutations before even one results in an improvement. Even a 15 billion year old universe isn't old enough for that many to have happened. And I think Aaron is exactly right. That is a major flaw in the theory.
Thank you for your excellent comments on the program tonight, Aaron. We're glad that you're listening down in Louisiana.
We've got a couple of emails from Tim in Springfield, Missouri. Tim, we're glad that you're listening tonight. Glad you found us on the Virtual Bible Study. Hope you'll be a regular participant and spread the word. He writes, let me get back here. I think this is the same email. I think I've got a duplication here, so let me read this one. The Bible proves itself through evidences not possibly known by man at the time the Bible was written. The following proves that someone with knowledge lived at the time of these writings. The earth is round, Job 26:10, Proverbs 8:27, Isaiah 40:22, Amos 9, verse 6. Job 38:7 says, when the morning stars sang together, stars emanate sound. Paths in the sea, Psalm 8, verse 8. Matthew Murray was the father of modern oceanography, lived in 1806 to 1817. He discovered the oceanic currents. His wife was reading the Bible and came across the passage in Psalm 8:8. Life is in the blood, Leviticus 17, verse 11. The father of our nation, George Washington, died by bloodletting. In other words, people didn't always understand that, but the Bible did. So Timothy in Springfield, Missouri, is suggesting, you know, the Bible gives evidence of the fact that an intelligence supplied this information, because the Bible reveals information that wasn't known in the day that the Bible was written. In other words, men had not learned these things on their own, but some truths are conveyed in the Bible that man could not have possibly put in there. It had to come from God. Now, we've had some previous virtual Bible studies dealing with the subject of inspiration, and that's a real strong argument for the truth that the Bible is inspired of God. But it also goes to our point tonight in the idea that there is an intelligent creator, that Jehovah God is an intelligent creator.
That's right. And, you know, Josh, it does make us think about Psalm 14, verse 1, when we consider the idea and the theory of evolution.
It says, the foolish man has said in his heart, there is no God.
The fool has said in his heart, Dad, there is no God. And we think about the evolutionists, while they think that they have developed a theory that explains how we get there, if we step back from it and compare it with what we see in the world today, we see that it is truly a foolish idea. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God.
I think that's exactly right. Jacob, you know, our virtual Bible study tonight, we're running out of time here, but our virtual Bible study tonight has not dealt with a whole lot of Bible verses or Bible concepts, because we've been dealing with a theory of men, and so we've had to kind of deal with that to show the flaws of that theory. Now, the alternative to that unworkable theory of evolution is that an intelligent creator, Jehovah God, created the heavens and the earth. And that's the story that the Bible tells. And you know that story of creation written by Moses so long ago in the first chapters of Genesis, it still works. It's still a plausible, workable explanation of where we came from. Of course, that's what we believe.
Yes, in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 3, we read, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so the things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. Dad, that's what we believe. We believe the world was created by an intelligent being who designed the world and created us. And Dad, when we see his intelligence in the world that we live in, we understand his intelligence. We understand his power. That is a being that we must be prepared to reckon with, Dad. We must learn about his will for us in our lives, and we must follow it, because we are living in a world created by an almighty God.
Exactly right. And I think that's the reason why so many are trying desperately to prove we came from some other source, because they do not want to submit to that creator.
Yes, when we admit that there is a God, there are consequences to admitting that. And the consequence is that we must give an answer for our life someday. And many are unwilling to do that. We appreciate you joining us on the program tonight. Josh, thanks for being here tonight.
I had fun, guys. It sure hadn't seemed like a whole hour since I first got here.
Well, we're glad that you're here. Dad, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, we enjoyed the discussion tonight, Jabe. Hope we said some things that have been an encouragement. My guess is that most all, if not all, of those listening tonight are in agreement about God's creative work. But we can talk about these things and encourage one another. You know, the evolutionists are the ones who need to be embarrassed or ashamed of their position. We've got nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed about.
That's right. For everyone who commented on the program tonight, we appreciate your comments, and we're appreciative of everyone who listened. We appreciate you joining us on the program tonight, and we hope you'll make plans to be back here next week. In the meantime, we encourage you to put God first in your life, study his inspired word, the Bible, and live by it every day. You'll never regret it.
Thanks for listening to the Virtual Bible Study, brought to you by the College View Church of Christ. The College View Church of Christ meets at 1618 Hampshire Pike in Columbia, Tennessee. If you are in the Columbia, Tennessee area, we encourage you to worship with the College View Church of Christ on Sunday mornings at 9:30 and on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. The College View Church of Christ also welcomes you to attend their Wednesday night Bible studies at 7 o'clock. If you have any questions about something that was said on tonight's broadcast or would like more information about the College College View Church of Christ, please call 931-381-4567. That number again, 931-381-4567. Or for more information on the internet, visit collegeview.com. Be sure to tune into the Virtual Bible Study this time next Thursday for another informative study of God's Word.